Welcome to the Team Flower Podcast. My name is Kelly, and we are gathering today to inspire you in your work with flowers. Today, our special guest is Hitomi Gilliam. She has design 358 and is located in Bowen Island, Canada. She works in partnership with their son, Colin, and their business is a floral education entity, and they create a lot of amazing floral design content. They host virtual floristry training workshops at designingforexcellence.com and elementsofinspiration.com. And she's currently getting ready for a virtual workshop in partnership with Gregor Lurch to design 100% organic towards sustainable floristry. Hitomi has traveled around the world teaching creative floristry. She's an innovative teacher and a wellspring of inspiration, especially when it comes to methods, mechanics, and techniques for flower creatives who want to really distinguish themselves from others. She is serving as the symposium program coordinator for the American Institute of Floral Designers, that's AIFD, if you're looking for them, here in 2022 coming up. She's all about sharing her knowledge to allow ideas, methods, things like that to evolve into something always better for the future. You can find her on Instagram at Hitomi Gilliam and website the same. I'll spell it out real quick. Hitomi Gilliam. And we'll, of course, we'll link everything in the show notes. Hitomi, it's so great to have you here today. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. No, it's great to be here and finally get to actually interface with you. Really exciting.
Yeah. Well, of course, I've admired your work from afar. And when I've had the opportunity to, learn from you, it's always been a pleasure. You always have so many incredible ideas and are so creative with the ways that you see the world around you. And I think what is just so special to me is the passion that just exudes from every cell of your being. And really just is something that helps us all stay charged up. So I just want to say thank you for your passion and how you spill that out for all of us here in the floral industry. It's really special. And we love you.
Well, thank you so much. And, I feel likewise with what you do is, I think this floristry just in general has a lot of passion within it, isn't it? I mean, the love of flowers right there, like it was all connected by that. And then after that, so what do we do with it? And sharing that knowledge in all different diverse sides of our subject matter is really, really, truly exciting. And I'm one that really believe in open sourcing, just putting it out there and see where it can go. You know, there's no such thing in my book as proprietary information that we little trade secrets that we keep because we don't want to release it to other people or share with other people. My thing is really about sharing because only with sharing can we evolve as a floor in floristry. So, and you do the same. I mean, you do exactly that, is constantly sharing and gathering people, building community so that everybody can, sort of share with each other and, you can celebrate together, commiserate together when things are not looking great. But, it's always good to have a community that you can identify with and enjoy your own progress within. So thank you for what you do also, Kelly.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. Absolutely. Community is so important, right? And I mean, even if think about this whole piece of, just sharing information and helping each other move forward. I feel like anybody who wants to have a life with flowers, we like need the help because if we think about how many places in our communities, if you just like think about the places that, that you and I live, that all of our listeners live in, there are places in our communities with people in them who have never maybe received a flower before. They don't even know, just how special it is to receive one, to feel the love and all those kinds of things. And since that's something that we know, we can share that. And we just need all the people to come that love them to learn as much as they can and share.
Yes. And it's so true. Like, within, I call it industry because that's just happens to be what a lot of people that's kind of in a lot of the retail businesses, people that I've been communicating with and educating for many years, they call it the industry. Sometimes I wonder, if you can do something better. I mean, I like the idea of just creative community, but anyway, it's just, we are always in the place of giving, providing and giving, and never, not as often being on the receiving end. And I just remember, you know, several times in my life, especially like the birth of my son, when I received flowers, and when you receive flowers, it really is a different experience. And, you know, so you really need to see both sides of it. And we want to provide as much opportunity for people to receive flowers. Anytime there's something, you know, like, and I know that you guys did, and a lot of the people in our business did, you know, during COVID, that, you know, providing the flowers that were not, you know, being sold, or that, you know, when things shut down, and using them for community sort of just spirit building purpose. And I really think those kind of efforts really, really did such good to really prove to everyone that how really an essential service that we provide, because we're really in the business of, it's not food to eat, but it's food for the soul mm-hmm. and the spirit. And people realize that. I mean, that is the reason why that since, you know, things start to come back, it's everybody wants it, because it's like everybody needs it. And so flower giving is a very, very wonderful gesture of keeping spirit high. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why we love it also, is that it really serves a very happy service, a purpose in most part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I just yesterday morning at 8:00, I had a new baby niece born, Raylan. And the first place I went, as soon as she came out and, you know, got everybody situated. And, I said, you know, I'm going to run out for a minute. And, you know, her and her husband were there. I said, I got to run out for a minute. The first place that I went was, where's the closest florist that I can find? Right. And it was just so great to be able to go in there and to pick something up, to take there, to celebrate the moment. And, there just should always be flowers at those special occasions. And I think that, you know, sometimes when you are a florist, or maybe, you know, you're a family or a florist, and so they don't want to send flowers. This is a message to all of the family members of florists that even though we have flowers all the time, it is so wonderful to be the recipient and to, I mean, I take, when I get them, I take them in, I put them right there by my bed. And, I think it's so great. So yes, give absolutely. All the flowers. It's so wonderful. Hatomi, I'm so curious about the first time that you received a flower. What was it that really sparked that passion and set you on this journey into, sharing flowers with the world?
Well, you know, it really wasn't about receiving flowers that spurred everything on. It really was. It's interesting because I'm Japanese. You know, I was actually born in Tokyo and I moved to North America when I was 12. So, you know, I've been most of my life in North America. So very Americanized, Canadianized, or whatever you might call it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my heritage really has a lot of flowers in its background, of course, you know, with Ikebana. And my mom actually was she was taking Ikebana lessons. It's just part of a kind of, in a way, sort of womanhood in Japan. Like, you know, you take cooking classes and you take a flower arranging class because it's part of what you do in a home. So the whole idea of having flowers in the home, and not for any special occasion, but just as an observance of seasons, was a very, very big part that I saw in our home. However, it never really, early on, never really appealed to me because I had, you know, I had a family that was very driven academically. I think you'll see that in a lot of Asian families, is, you know, it's all about, you know, educating ourselves to be successful, you know, so it's really about lawyers, you know, doctors, you know, highly professional kind of careers that they want you to pursue. And that's kind of almost like etched into our mind that that has to happen. And the interesting thing is, when I came out of high school and I was, you know, just thinking of going to college and that, you know, I was really very art oriented. I really saw myself as an artist, but my parents really actually forbid me to go to art because that's just a hobby. It's not a profession. And I mean, they just kind of really squashed the whole idea. And so consequently, I actually went into, because I got jobs at in a nursery where I was doing propagation and I saw different phases of what happens in the greenhouse, that I was starting to become quite interested in plants. And so I decided that, for me to survive, I mean, I couldn't think of going to, you know, dentistry or, you know, to a med program. Like I just, that just wasn't me. And so I thought if there's some way to tie science, which is really the route my parents are going to, because my father was a professor at the University of the Sciences. So, you know, obviously that's kind of what they wanted me to pursue. And so I had to find something that I can tie in what I maybe want to do somewhere in the future and, you know, artistic oriented that also had some enough credibility so that they would permit me to pursue. And that was actually in the landscape horticulture. So that's kind of what I pursued as landscape horticulture. So there was a fair amount of design in it, the landscaping, a lot of, you know, just horticulture, nomenclature, all that kind of stuff, which they endorsed. So, you know, I went into that. And then, I married and I went ahead and my ex-husband and I pursued growing. So we were actually a greenhouse grower and we ended up being a very big specialist in fuchsias. We had over 360 varieties of fuchsias offered for mail order and also local sales and hanging baskets and things like that. And we also grew bedding plants. So that's kind of how I entered the flower market, and not from the designing point of view, not at all. It was from the growing, and we weren't even really growing flowers as cuts. We were growing plants as just decorative elements for the garden. And then we went on then because we had a real rough winter, and you know, this is still early on in our greenhouse business, but we had a rough winter coming in because we had a whole greenhouse full of actually Colia standards. They were fantastic. They were beautiful. We invested our time and all our effort to growing a whole greenhouse full of it, started to ship it through the local market. We have actually a flower auction, kind of like Osmere,
okay,
in Vancouver. We have had it for many years. So we were shipping through the auction and nobody would buy it. And we had this whole greenhouse full with a full winter ahead that was dependent on that crop to see us through. And we couldn't sell not any of it. Like we couldn't get the dollars we needed. We would take it in. It would be not rejected, but it just nobody wanted to pay the price that we needed. So we would bring it home. And we did that several weeks. And we were like so strapped for what are we going to do to survive this winter? So then we stopped in our town, which is Mission, British Columbia. Back then we lived in the Fraser Valley, and we stopped in the town and was having coffee at Dairy Queen. And across the street, we saw, storefront that was for lease or for rent. And we thought, oh, this might be what we have to do. Maybe we need to open a shop. A plant shop, because that was a heyday. This is like in the late 70s. So this is a heyday of a plant boom, hanging mm-hmm. baskets, you know, all like just kind of what it's like today. It was then. And we thought, okay, so we can sell our product through there, retail, and we're going to the auction anyway. So we'll buy other plants that we could then bring home and sell at the shop. So we're going to have a plant shop. So we just opened like just the spur of the moment. And that's how we started. And then within a year, I mean, constantly, there was only one flower shop in this town. People would come by and say, do you do weddings? Do you do weddings? And for at least the first 6 months, I was saying no, because I didn't know how and I had no idea. So but then finally, you know, just a friend of mine, a neighbor down the road from our greenhouse, they said, oh, you know, they were actually former florists. They were retired florists from Vancouver. They said they would show me how to do a small wedding if I wanted to take one. So that's how it started. It started with a wedding. And I learned to do it. And they said, in that first try, they said, oh, I think you're a natural. I mean, it took me like, 6 hours to do a bridal bouquet, a bridesmaid's bouquet, and corsage and boutonniere. It took me 6 hours to do it. But they said, you know, I think it's promising. I think you should do this. So that's kind of how it started. So we started to do flowers and we installed a cooler and became florists. That's how we became.
Wow. That's how you did it. That's where it all
started. Yeah, that's how we did it. Exactly.
Oh, wow. Very cool. Very cool. So as you know, time moves on 5 years from then, what's it look like for you then? And tell us a little bit about what are you practicing and what are some of those favorite tools and supplies, that you were maybe using then that you still think are really important. And then skip forward to now. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with you now.
Okay. Well, so you want me to tell you a little bit about 5 years into
Tell us how it went.
So we'll start there. So it's really exciting because I really discovered something that was just a perfect thing for me because I wanted to pursue art. I love plants and this married the two of them so perfectly as a florist. So then I deep dived into floristry, you know, like again, I had no training whatsoever other than that one lesson with a retired florist. And so, and I was very shy. I really didn't have very good communication skills. I was good enough to take the money at the cash register and say, thank you. That's about it. Like, that's kind of how it was. My husband was actually much better communicating with the customers. But anyway, but I deep dive really into floristry. And so how I trained myself, I would go to all the different flower shops, not during the day, but at night, and look in their window, take pictures of things that were really intriguing to me. And then I would then try making it. That's kind of how I did it because I didn't have the nerve to go in during the day and ask, you know, anything of a florist, nor I think on a few attempts, I mean, even at the beginning, just going to the wholesaler, I was so intimidated because they were never friendly. I always felt really horrible during that time because, you know, the big florist, they kind of said, oh, you're the little florist. I mean, it was always like, and where are you from? Where's your shop? Oh, you know, it was always like that. And then even some of the wholesale vendors, like the salesmen, if you are not professional, they just treated you badly. And at the beginning, I think even some of the wholesalers, when I finally started to buy, I swear to you, I think they filled my order with junk out of the garbage. I mean, I had to deal with really adversity. Like if you are not a professional, you just weren't treated like you belonged in it. That's kind of how it was at the beginning. And it was really hard. And so needless to say, I wasn't going to walk into a flower shop and try to strike up a conversation because I knew that they want to know why I'm asking these questions. And so I really stayed to myself. But I did, you know, sign up for subscriptions for some magazines because I knew that way I can read and look up pictures. So I did that. And that sort of led me to, you know, there was a lot of really great like wholesale shows and things that were happening. Of course, I was never invited because I was never a big enough customer really to be invited, but I would still see the notice or poster and I would go. And I just was in awe of it when I saw the professionalism and what the professionals were doing. And, you know, I was curious about everything. And, you know, I had so many questions, but I didn't have the gall to go up and ask. And so to this day, when I do a show and there's a young man, like, you know, somebody in their late teens, the son of, you know, one of the people that's attending, that's standing by the stage and looking at me like they want to ask questions, I go right to them because I was that person that wanted to do that, but knew that I was too shy to do it, and I was just simply afraid that they would just blow me off. And so I'm really, really conscious about teaching the beginners, teaching people that are just getting into it, because I know those are the people that will be the future when they persevere and will get through. And I want to help them the most. You know, the ones that's been in it for a long time that already have the tools to do it, I will most certainly help them in all my capacity. But sometimes, you know, some of the attitudes that comes from the season kind of background is not, you know, that's not what I don't do. I want these fresh eyes and I want to grow them faster. that's really important to me. And so for me, even though I'm an educator within the industry, respected in industry, work with you know, some different companies from time to time, not indebted to them, but work with them to help them in way that I feel fit to do my part. You know, my emphasis is really still on anybody who wants to learn about flowers. And it doesn't matter whether they're a beginner, that they've only picked up the knife last week. It doesn't matter to me what level they are, because I feel like if they embrace the learning, in fact, they can overtake people that's been doing it for 20 years in probably a year. And I've seen that. You know, people have, creators have ideas, and you have to nurture them. That's the most important thing. You have to nurture that desire and that sense of creativity, however new that they're at it, because fresher they are, they're more open to do more with what they have. You know, if you've been working in a shop where, like if you're an employee, for instance, from a shop that's in a very tightly controlled environment where this is the way it's done, this is the only way it's done, it's really hard for those people to break out. I have a lot of students that, you know, that come and say to me right at the beginning when they introduce themselves, I'm not very good at this, but I really want to learn. And I'm like, why do they say that at first? It's because they've been knocked down several times. Mm. And so they're prefacing it by saying that I'm not very good at this, but I want to learn. And I'm thinking, I got to stop that. That's one of the first thing that I say is, you'll see by the end of this class that you're really good at this. I will prove to you so that you won't say that anymore, because that gets in the way. So that's kind of where it's at. And really within 5 years, actually, I start to compete. I actually start to compete about 3 years in. And I actually won several local things. And by the within 6 years, I actually won a national championship.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I was intent. I wanted to do this. I wanted it to be the best. I researched magazines, pictures, anything. This is before social media, so it's not as easy as it is today to look things up. Mm-hmm. But I worked really hard because I had the same intent as what my parents wanted me to be in whatever field they wanted to be in. But I had the same intent to be really good at what I do. They never endorsed what I did. I mean, even after I published my first book, I mean, that was good. They had something to show off to their friends that their daughter did kind of turn out. But they never really endorsed what I've done, because they're academics. They're not entrepreneurial, nor are they artistic on the artistic side. They don't see art as of anything of value. So, you know, it was almost to the very end of my dad's life. I think it was maybe 4 years before he passed away. He came to, my parents had access to come and see any of the design programs that I told them I was going to be at locally, but they never came to any of those. The only time they came was when it was at the university, because that's where they are. And that was their kind of bragging right. At the University Women's Club, I did two programs for them. They came to see me there. And they told me then that I am pretty good at this. So, you know, it took a lot of proving to my parents, but it didn't matter to me, because for me, it was important for me that I did what I love. And I didn't fold to their desire for me to pursue what they wanted me to become. But I also wanted to show and prove to them that there's a highest level of anything, and that I was striving for the highest level for me to be an artist of my medium, my chosen medium. And that's, you know, I feel really good about that, because my two younger sisters one is in medicine, she's a doctor, and the other one's an accountant. So they've sort of followed along the parents' the paths. I did not. I was always the one that didn't do it right. But you know what? But I feel like I know for myself that I did it right for me. And I'm much happier. I'm a happier person than any one of my sisters.
Aww. I feel like you just really encouraged some people that were maybe listening along, like in secret, you know, and really wanting to pursue this, but feeling, you know, whether it be family or some other type of, you know, pressure, social pressure that they were experiencing. They felt like that they couldn't do it. And I feel like you may have just let some people, I feel like you may have just given some people some air and a little bit of relief in that. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. What would you say if someone's listening and they are in that position, how would you advise them to take the next step?
Well, I mean, knowing what I know now, I can advise this, and I didn't have a privilege to pursue that route, but it really is about being part of a community so that you have somebody to talk to. That's what you need. You need to have conversations, somebody who will support you. And so, you know, belong to a flower community, you know, like Team Floral or AIFD, or, you know, so that you're amongst your peers who are as passionate as you are, so that whenever you're feeling down about what's happening in your career that is not being supported by people who you want, who you really truly want them to support you, but you're not getting the nod, that there's other people that will kind of tell you like you're doing the right thing and you're getting awesome. I mean, that's what I hope to provide when I'm teaching, is to let people know that they're on the right track, that they're doing good. You know, my method of teaching is a lot about positivity, because my thing is to always point out what they're doing really good, what their strengths are. I want to that's the first thing I was project in the class, is I look for what they're good at. Like, oh my gosh, she's awesome with color, or oh, she's mechanically like so awesome. And I want to tell them that, because that kind of makes you feel like you're getting somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then I always couple that with where you can improve. I don't drill it. I don't make that, you know, make a real fuss over that side of it, you know, but they need to know what they need to add to make it stronger, because they already have the strength in something. Keep it, keep nurturing it. And then now if you want to beef up this, like, look at this. Do you think it might be like, look at this. If I move it to here, does that make sense to you? Like, does that create a better balance? And they're like, oh, yeah. And then I say, and you were so close. You were just right. To do is tweak it over there. And you were that close. Mm-hmm, and, you know, it's a real positive way of teaching. And, you know, for many years when I have taken class after all, because one of the first classes I took was one of the award for coming in like second, I got a class to something. So that's how I started my learning, is because I couldn't afford it. I couldn't afford any classes, actually. That's why I couldn't, you know, I was a struggling florist with not a whole lot of money. So as much as I would love to take a class, I just simply couldn't. I couldn't afford it. But the first one that I took was, you know, was a part of the prize. And so I went to a class and I just loved it. And I thought, you know, I'm going to do everything I can from now on. If I do good in business and I have a little bit ahead, I'm going to take a class. So that's what got me hooked to taking class. But in taking classes, I saw different styles. It's different styles that were, some of them were very yes or no, black and white. You can do this and it's the only way. I really didn't like that, because I was doing another way and I thought it was not that bad. And they made me change it because this is the only way. And I guess that I was sort of rebel heart always, that I always felt like I thought I was smart enough that if I came up with something, I can justify why this is good. And I did not like it when an instructor would tell me, no, you can't do that. And I know as an employer as well, that if you approach managing a store, because I had 27 years of retail, I had a flower shop for 27 years, that's like the worst thing, is when you don't give them room to do a little bit of their own thing. they're going to sell better. If it was a little bit of their own thing, they're going to design better. If there's a little bit of their own thing, if you made them do exactly and only what you want them to do, it's a half-hearted effort because it didn't have any bit of them in it. And so that's one of the reason why, and thank you for mentioning the class that I'm doing with Gregor Lersch. And Gregor and I have been teaming up. This is our third workshop called Organics. And I believe in team teaching because I found that over the years, I used to teach also for many years with John Haynes. He was a great partner of mine for many years. And he actually won the major national competition the year I came in second to him. And then it's the following year that I won the competition. We were very good friends because we were both very innovative, creative thinking. We would have great conversation. And we taught together many, many, many times because we saw the value of people seeing two ways of doing things. And so that it's not about, I'm right. No, I'm right. It's not about that. It's kind of like you can do it this way. And then I would glance over at what John's doing because we would teach side by side on stage. And I would say, John, I see that you're doing it differently, but I do it like this. We used to have this kind of a real kitschy kind of conversation on stage because, you know, and then he would say afterwards, he's like, oh yeah, as soon as you show them that, everybody's just all surrounding you and they want to flock around you and see. And we would just laugh about it because it was just funny. There was never competition because we knew that we each carried some really great lessons for every one of those people out there. We gave them opportunity to try both and decide which one that's fit for them. And so team teaching is very important, like designing for excellence. I teach with four different designers so that we have four different classes, but I partner with four different people on that particular subject for that very reason, because I don't believe people should be taught only one way. I think they should have options. And then, you know, having a project that they do after that, we would both kind of do a review so that, you know, I can say what I think is your strength. If it differs from what Gregor says, that's great, because that's another, it's a double praise. I think that's great. People should feel good about what they're doing. Every one of them that have taken this as their path should be celebrated to begin with. So it always starts with that, the positive endorsement of their ability, and then giving them a little tip on how you can do a little bit better next time in this area. Mm-hmm. We have, as you know, Kelly, I'm sure because you deal with so many people that come from other career. It's their second and third career, and right. They've always wanted to do flowers. So they feel really a little bit timid because they're a little bit older and there's a brand new newbie, a freshman, and they feel really intimidated even before they start. And, you know, I always tell them, draw on your previous experience because that gives you more to beef up your resume than saying you just don't know anything right now. And I find that there's a lot of people that, you know, that come from some sort of artistic or, you know, theater or some kind of artistic background or some interest, music, whatever. When I teach those kind of people that are new, I draw on their previous experience saying, what did you do when you were creating, you know, like I have a student right now who is a fabulous jeweler, but she's feeling really, you know, kind of awkward and kind of, fumbly with flowers because she can't make it do what she used to do with wire, you know, metal. And I'm like, just remember, like, how did it feel when you first started out with that wire? And how did you conquer that? Just draw on that memory because it'll come to you a lot quicker if you think in terms of what you know already. And that is huge because people like that actually blossom because they can marry the two careers. And they have an edge over others because they actually have extra skills that actually adds to their signature. And I want to encourage that. So, I'm kind of a real education kind of methods of teaching specialists. Also, I do a lot of research on so many other medium so that I have examples of what happens. Like when people don't understand when you're talking solar elements and principles and you're trying to explain in our terms, they don't quite get it. Then I might just switch to talking about food in cooking. Mm-hmm. Just think of it in cooking when you have this ingredient, and it's like this, what do you do? And, you know, we add this to spice it up. And when you explain it that way, they're like, and I say, it's exactly the same as that. And they're like, oh, I get it. You know, so that you really learn by parallel examples also. Mm-hmm, and I'm really interested in building an arsenal of those because that resonates to more people. And it's not just oriented only for florists. I think sometimes we become a little too insular. Florists should be using sculptural techniques because that's how you get new. You hybridize with other medium and other medium way of thinking. Mm-hmm. Because then you get really new. You don't ever get new when it keeps staying insular. It's almost kind of incestual. You're just kind of spinning what's happening just within. Not only is that making it the results not as exciting, but it's also it just keeps it too stagnant. That's kind of how I feel.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. I've one more question. It might seem like a silly question, but I'm wondering, do you have, or what is it? What is your favorite color? And is there some kind of story that goes along color. With it? Do you have a story that goes along with the color maybe?
Well,
has it come to you? Did something?
You know what? Well, there's lots come to me with colors. I can talk on end about almost everything. But color, I have to say, you know, with my original set of skills and color was not my strong suit. Because just remember, I'm Japanese with Ikebana. Ikebana is a very minimal kind of a design. I mean, this way of thinking, I shouldn't say that I started with designing Ikebana. I started designing Western because I was a florist. But I had the sensibility of a typical Japanese that comes from that background. So minimal was easier for me. I can design minimal better than mass. So that was kind of, you know, when I compete, that's my style. It happens to be a good style for competing, however. So, but as far as the color side go, it was never my strong suit because in Japan, you know, it's not devoid of color, but it's color is not an emphasis. You know, spiritually, it's about the living, the line. Line is the emphasis. That's why Ikebana shows a lot of bare stem and there's only three main lines that represents heaven, man, and earth. And so, you know, it's not about, the color was not the big deal. It's really about the line and what it stands for, the form of the flower, what it stands for, but color was never there. So I really, competitively, I almost always use monochromatic. And I would sort of branch out a little bit more and go, oh my God, what's the next one? The side by side, I just like is escaping me at the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, when you sort of work with the red violet, and the violet.
Analogous.
That's with an A. Yes.
Yeah. Thank analogous. You. Yeah.
Sometimes okay. Something. Yeah. Much because that's kind of sometimes my brain just sort of.
No, I can totally relate. And you just made me feel much better as a human. So thank you. I have some every once in a while. It's just like it's right there, but I can't quite catch it. So yes.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're really together to help each other find.
Yes. Thank you very much. Yes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, analogous color harmony felt safe also, and I can identify it. I can spot it. I can. You know, create it really easily. But beyond that, and I have to admit, you know, when you go to, you know, like the three primary colors, you know, triadic, like that looked garish to me. I couldn't handle it. And only can I teach it what it is, but I couldn't handle designing it because it was just too garish to me. I mean, so, you know, I was very opinionated when it became to that other, you know, the higher levels of, not higher levels, it's more multiple colors. But I was totally enlightened. I just had like on my Patreon group, I had a guest, Per Benjamin. He's from Sweden. He was a World Cup winner in like 2001. He's a fabulous designer, but most of all, his biggest asset is color. And he wrote a book called, you know, A World of Color, according to Per Benjamin, because he has a really different set of color theory. That's sort of, it's still based on the main, but it has a different approach. And I spent a week with him when I was in Mexico. He was one of the guest designers. I was a guest designer as well. And, you know, I was done with my work. So I was helping him out, you know, just prepping his. And so, you know, go to the market and seeing what he's picking out. And in Mexico at the market, it's really kind of pretty slim picking. There's only a couple of booths that would have a range of stuff. Most of it is sort of monoculture. So, you know, there's a booth that would have all sunflowers. It would be a booth that would have all callas. There's a booth that has nothing but status, mixed and solid colors. I mean, it's just crazy. It's bales of stuff. And he would pick like a bale of like status that's all different colors, and I'm like, what the heck is gonna do with that? Looks so messy, I can't see it, and it's all status, by the way. And then he would go to the chrysanthemum booth and then pick out like that kind of honey colored kind of real blob. You know, today it's hot, but not back when brown wasn't the thing. And so he would pick that, like a daisy or pom-pom mums in that color. And I'm thinking, what the heck is going to do that? That's my least favorite color. I would never use it because it really doesn't, it seemed almost void of color to me at that time. This is like, you know, 10 plus years ago. So then I would ask him, I said, why are you picking so much of that color? He says, that's my secret, because that's the color that ties to every color. And I'm like, excuse me, can you explain? And really what it comes down to is this. If you have a box of watercolor paint, and if you add one color to the other, it always turns brown. And so it has all those other colors in it, in one. So if you put a lavender next to it, you can see the lavender in it. If you put pink next to it or red next to it, you can actually see that in it. It's like whatever you put against it, that color is in there. And I thought, oh my God, I would have never thought about it. And ever since, I keep looking at it, working with it, and thinking he's so right. It's really amazing. I think that's the reason why brown has become so popular, because it has every hue in it.
It is an amazing blender, and isn't it?
I mean, makes total sense, because that's the reason why I couldn't do watercolor, because I would always botch it up and everything would turn brown. And that's what was always a result of my color mixing. And I'm thinking, wow, it just reversed that and made that the reason why it works.
Wow.
Yeah, that was mind-blowing. Awesome. That's where I became adventurous after that. Then I was not afraid of color anymore.
Yes. So good. Cool. That's an amazing story.
Okay. A good one, isn't it?
It is a good story. It really is. Okay. Last question is, what do you feel like that you carry or that you want to say to the floral community today? What is it that just you're so passionate about? You have to shout it from the rooftops.
Well, I guess, you know, what I want to shout out really is about sustainable floristry. And I know there's a lot of people amongst your age group and then your sort of community that truly believes in it too. And I'm loving it, because the future seems bright for that direction, because the younger ones don't want anything to do with anything that's not towards the wellness of the planet. So that makes me feel good. But meanwhile, we still need to educate people to be mindful of everything. And I say everything, because even the younger ones, while they may be no foam, but on the other hand, they're using terrible, you know, things that's being treated with chemicals to achieve the bleaching or all of that. And, you know, you can't just be anti something and not follow through on the other side. And I really believe that, you know, and it starts from the core for me, because, you know, because I actually work with my son, who is like a real, like a, a real activist. Like everything mm-hmm. I do, if I don't separate the garbage in the right way, in the right slot, like we have these issues. He helps me, you know, to set up a workshop, and he'll set up all the different bins for all the different things that has to be separated. And he's like a police. I mean, he watches that thing. And if people don't comply, he doesn't get after them. He will just go and fix it right after everybody leaves to make sure that everything right happens with all the recyclables and stuff like that. But when I'm working at the work table or, you know, during teaching, and he sees me, like I use a lot of bind wire to bind things together to create armature or structure. And then, you know, and then I'm stripping leaves and taking off the wrappers and all of that. And then I just kind of go into this one box underneath, just sweep the whole thing. He's like, afterwards, he's like, Mom, you can't do that. I gave you three bins behind you and you need to separate. I said, are you kidding me? Like, I'm busy. Like, I can't, I'm a florist. I have to do it fast. He says the fast in the future has to have that component in it. You have to get fast at doing the separation, or you have to design where you don't use any contaminants. So this is what I have that's sort of pecking at the back of my brain every day that makes me go that direction. You know, I resisted because it was really inconvenient, mm-hmm. but now I truly believe it, you know, like try really hard to close a loop, mm-hmm. you know, try not to put any bit of contaminant, you know, it's easy also for me because bind wire is paper, but it has that thin wire in it. It's like, I'm thinking little cuttings of that in with my cuttings, plant cuttings, that couldn't make that much of a difference. He's like, yes, it does. It contaminates it. You need to separate those out. And I'm like, that's just getting too picky. He's like, yeah, but if you don't do it right, you're just doing it lukewarm, and you should do it right. And I get the drill every time. And I really appreciate that because I see more and more that becomes that little something is what becomes the excuse for not doing. And really, we should be doing it right. And so, you know, like this workshop that we're doing, and this is also with Gregor. He says we should do 100% organic. I'm like, can't we do 90% organic so that we can still use these cool things that we still like that will recycle? Like, still, it's recyclable things or biodegradable things, but like, can't we do it like 90%? So it gives people a little bit of wiggle room to kind of still do something they like. And he says, no, we should do 100%. And more I thought about it, I said, you're right. Because when you know how to do it 100%, then you'll be likely to move faster to it, you know, to 60%, 70%, 80%. You'll move faster to it because you know the end solution. And I said, it's right. Knowing that you can do it, you will make a better effort to get there faster. Mm-hmm, I thought that is a good thing because if you don't do it, you keep putting it off. That's what you do. You keep putting it off. I'll do it later. I'll do it later. Mm-hmm. And so the commitment to know that if I can do it 100% and what that is, and, you know, like, for instance, like for designing like a hand tie bouquet, the only thing that's often stopping it from being 100% home compostable, that's really important to know, home compostable versus industrial compostable, because a lot of things say compostable, but is it home compostable? You want it to be home compostable so that when your customer takes it home and has it in the vase, and then when it's done, they can actually discard the whole thing into their compost without separating anything. Don't you think that will turn more consumers to be environment conscious because they can do the right thing easily? Mm-hmm. But if they have to separate everything and that they can't do it right, or that it has to go to landfill because you use something, a plastic in there, so that you can't throw the whole thing in there, then you're not enabling them to be doing the right thing. So if we build in that it enables people to be 100% organic and being able to home compost for their garden so that it goes to the wellness of their garden. And then you're really doing a huge service, not just for our industry to build up that we are very much sustainable, but also makes those people sustainable human beings. I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. Make it easy for them to do this instead of them putting it off forever, you know? So
I was thinking this week about just the future of gifting and yes. about how we offer a really unique gift that can be 100% home compostable, like you were mentioning. And it's not something I know that the term, some people are using it in their marketing, sustainable floristry, things like that. But I just feel like there's such an opportunity to really talk about gifting and it just being a very sustainable gift. And I think it's something that, there's not a lot of totally gifts like that. So we just gotta plant the seeds, so to speak.
You know, we have, our product is compostable, 100% organic. Now, I have to say that there's a lot of product that's being brought in that is not certified organic. And, you know, people ask me about that. What about those? Like, when, where do you get the 100% organic? I mean, 100% organic comes from a lot of farmer florists that grow it organically so that it is for this purpose of 100% organic in the end. But there's a lot of vendors and a lot of growers, you know, big guys that are still using some sort of chemicals and pesticides and whatever. But the thing is, those are also compostable, but it sort of still contaminates the soil, like perpetuates the pesticide so that you can't use it to grow food to be ingested. Mm-hmm. But it's still compostable so that it goes back to the earth. So it's still compostable, still, just you can't put it where there might be for growing food. Mm. But it's just understanding all this. And the more you feel like, and I feel like you can grow this business, like if you have a flower shop or if you have a business where you kind of pitch this, and you're absolutely right, Kelly, there's an opportunity for us that you're going to make some real believers in your commitment, not just as a florist, but to the environment. And as more and more people start to realize the importance of minding the wellness of our planet so that all these beauty can continue. I think this is a great way of, like you say, the gift that really delivers that, which is really important.
Yeah, it is important. So good.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Tomi, it has been so wonderful to talk with you today. I just appreciate you being here so much. Again, everybody, her Instagram is Tomi Gilliam, same website address there as well. Hop over. And I just really invite you guys that have listened today, reach out to her on Instagram and just say, hey, thank you so much for being there. You know, encourage her, send her love, all those kinds of good things. We need to always be grateful and always be letting each other know that that we're thankful for each other. So please, everybody who's listening, reach out and say thank you. All right.
I appreciate that so much. And I just want to say, just to sort of wrap up my end of it, that I am a sharer. I don't hold anything back. Any questions, I answer every question. It's really important for me, you know, for anybody who wants to become better and want to learn, I want to be there for them. So email, you know, message, whatever. I'm really good at answering. I really don't. So just to let you know that, and I really appreciate you, Kelly. You're doing such a fine job with building the communities, building community of wonderful people who believe in a lot of the good things that we've talked about. So thank you so much, Kelly.
Absolutely. Okay, we'll talk to you later.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, it's Kelly, and I wanted to invite you to head over to accentdecor.com and check out their new fall winter collection. One of my favorite collections in this new launch is called Sanctuary, and I'm going to read just a little snippet out of the catalog for you. It says, more than anything else, we desire spaces that feel like a beautiful sanctuary, a respite from the world, and a reminder of home. The Sanctuary story honors and incorporates the textures, colors, shapes, and places that make home an oasis of calm and beauty. New pieces for the home and kitchen get layered with plants and light for a story that reminds us all of where we've come from and where we're hoping to go. Head over to accentdecor.com
click on catalogs and look for the new fall winter trend book. You're gonna love it. Thanks for listening. You can find us over at teamflower.org for more resources like this one. And while you're there, check out the Team Flower Conference. That's where we all gather to learn and grow together. It is magic. You are magic. The work that you do with flowers matters. And we are so grateful for you. Keep going. You're doing a good job.